We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To True Faith Podcast, we're not sure what to call this one. It's a kind of preview, review, pre-review. Use however many of those words as you want. We can talk to you today about the Sheffield United game at home and the upcoming last game of the season, Fulham away. I'm delighted to be joined on the line and on the screen by Norman and Si. Hello, gents. How are we?
Good evening.
Hello. Good. Thanks, Mickey.
Yesterday was one of the great days. Return of fans to the grounds. For me, anyway, we'll discuss the difference between my experience of the match and yours. But I met Alex and a few of the lads in the pub before the game. Had a few pints, walked up to the match with my dad, went in the grounds, stood in our usual seats, sang about the tune, and watched Newcastle United play football live for the first time in 15 months. And it was, I'm not exaggerating, one of the great days, despite what was an utterly dismal performance. It was brilliant for me to see fans back in the stadium. It's been class to see it on the telly already. But to experience it myself yesterday was so class, and it was just a memory of what life used to be like. Like we used to be able to go to the match with our mates. We used to be able to go to the pub before the match. We used to be able to tell our wives we'd only had 2 pints, when actually we've had 5. Like all of the great stuff was back yesterday. And I had an absolutely fantastic time. One thing I had really forgotten about, Norman, was that taking in the match in the ground, especially when you've got a bit of a dodgy seat like sitting in the corner, is a massively different experience to watching it on the telly. And thankfully tonight, when we're looking back at the game, we've got myself who was at the game and you two that both weren't. So Norman, what was it like for you watching that on the telly?
Well, first of all, mate, when you said one of the great days, I thought you were being sarcastic, but then I realised it was because you're returning the match. Because the match itself, I don't know if that'll be remembered much in the next 10 years or so. But when I listened to the Match Day podcast and when I spoke to Alex briefly yesterday, and he mentioned he was meeting you in the pub, all the old feelings started returning, how much, the social aspect of it, especially when you support a club like Newcastle and obviously lots of other clubs, that don't win trophies. The social aspect of it is what's the most important thing, right? It's the meeting your mates, it's having a few beers, and the football almost is secondary because it can be good, it can be bad. It's never consistent, right? And when I listened to the Match Day podcast and I heard you all having a drink in the boozer, I thought I cannot wait to get back. And that's in spite of everything. That's in spite of how miserable Newcastle United are as a football club in general, how poor Steve Bruce is as a manager, how utterly ambitious. What would you say? Ambitiousness, can we say that? How lacking in ambition we are as a club. Meeting your mates at the match is one of the best things. And also drinking during the day at the weekend is one of life's greatest things for me. Not that I've got a problem, but God almighty, I love pathological Max here drinking. I just love it and I can't deny it. So I got that in my system. The match itself, what I found interesting, mate, was... So obviously I got feedback from you lads who've been to the match. And I know that you berated the performance to the extent where I was thinking, was it that bad? And what it made me realise was actually, when you're watching it on TV, because really the TV cameras are focusing on where the ball is, right? You're not really seeing what's happening off the ball. So you're not seeing lack of movement or players running into wrong positions or players just not bothering. You're just seeing the ball and the players around it. And to me, the performance wasn't that bad. No, admittedly, there's an element of Bruce's window here, right? Things have been so bad for so long. What's good has shifted, right? So yesterday wasn't horrifically mediocre, we won, therefore it was good, or it was our read. It was our read because things are so bad usually that we won yesterday, we kept a clean sheet, we didn't play tremendously poorly. So it was our read, and some of the performances that I saw, I thought were decent. Wasn't one of the greatest performances by any stretch of imagination, but I just found it interesting the difference it makes being in the stadium and seeing the bigger picture. And you come out after the bigger picture and you're like, that was shocking, that. Whereas I don't think I found it as shocking, you know?
I think it can go both ways, Mick. Yeah, I don't know if you're, I don't know how close to the pitch you were in the corner. Were you basically where you normally sit?
Yeah.
Or close to, yeah. Right. So from there, and I'm more traditionally used to go to the match when I was younger in towards the back of the Gallagher, or I'd spent some time in level 7. And I think you get a really good view of the overall match from the higher seats in the stadium. But you're absolutely right that when you're near the front, it's totally, totally different to watching it on TV, because you've got a very specific view of the match, and you can see a bit more in a bit more detail what's happening to the players right in front of you, where the cameras might not pick up actually a little touch here and how good that was to beat a man or whatever. But at the same time, you've got no real concept of the runs that are being made, of the effort levels, of kind of how the team's shaping up when you're that close, because you're just more focused on the action as it happens at the Gallagher end or in that corner. So it is, it must have been, because obviously you were there, Mickey, it must have been nice and fun to have that perspective back again, compared to just watching on telly every week where it's just, it feels the same and it gets a bit almost monotonous. You sort of, that's how you watch a football match. Because I've just got used to, I only ever watch a football match on telly now, and it's, you just see the whole pitch and you're not seeing up close, as you say, Norman. It does follow the ball around, but you're not really seeing individuals, because I might spend a bit of time in the match watching, well, who's, you know, back in, when I was a kid, I just watched Robert. Didn't matter if he had the ball, I would just watch him all day long and see what runs he was making and see what he was kind of, and you don't do that when you're watching the telly, you just watch what the camera wants you to watch. So there's a massive difference, and for me, that's the one thing I do miss about being in the match, is kind of choosing how to take it in, because the TV cameras have got a very specific way of showing you a football match, and often the most frustrating thing in the world ever is if there's a goal kick's been taken and they're still doing a close-up of someone's reaction to missing a shot or something. So you miss how the team shapes up for these quite important things, and how quickly we've got back in shape, and that kind of informs you about the effort levels and what's going on in the game. And I suppose that's why you lads have come back from the match last night with a kind of different view to what we've seen, which anyone who's watched it at home and watched the highlights will think, well, Newcastle did all right. They've done a job. They've won the game. But from you and Alex and others, it doesn't feel like you've had that same experience. And I suppose there's a little bit more of, you've made the effort to get there, so there's a little bit more expectation because you're at the match and you're like, well, how are lads? Give us something. We're here. We're supporting you. So it's mad how different it is, and you kind of forget that because of how long it's been.
Good point, that last one there on your expectation levels when you actually make the effort to get in the match. I think that is what makes it more frustrating, especially if you get into an away match, right, and the team just folds. Yeah. It's absolutely devastating because you think, well, I've come all this way and I haven't even, you know, the effort that I've put in coming here is like more effort than you've put in, like, on the pitch. But you're right there, the view and being in the stadium. And for me, I do like to be high up. I like to be at St. James's, either in the Leasers or the Gallagher, high up, because I like to see the full pitch in front of us, because those little things that you know, you some people enjoy, and I do. I enjoy seeing the positions of the players. I enjoy seeing how the defence moves. Even with kick-off when you're seeing it, and you can see the lineup of the players, and you're thinking, right, this is what we're doing today. And I think under Benitez more, because of his kind of, his tactical nous, you would look at a Benitez game at kickoff and you think, right, this is how we're going to play today. And you could see that kind of shape shifting during the game. And I really miss that. And you're right, we've got so used to watching it on TV. I think I got a bit of Stockholm syndrome yesterday when I started missing the fact that the stadiums were empty. I was like, oh, do I like it now that they're fans in? I think it's a Stockholm syndrome. I feel like I've been kidnapped. And it's almost like I don't want to see 3D anymore. I just want to have my life on Zoom in empty stadiums. But I'll get over it, I'm sure.
One thing that I did think about after I found out that you lads didn't think the match was as bad as we did was, how bad would it have been to be at the match in that January run? You know, if we thought that was terrible, which we did, and it was, like, by the same kind of ratio, it must have been even worse if you'd been there. And like, how could it be even worse than what was absolutely dismal for 4 months? It just made me realize again just how lucky Bruce has been that fans haven't been in the ground for that absolutely terrible run. One other thing that I'd sort of forgotten that happens at football, especially when you sit lower down, is early on in the first half, we had a decent chance, or what seemed like a decent chance, with some quite clever build-up, and something happened at the other end of the pitch, and I just had no idea what it was. Like, we just didn't score, and I couldn't tell. I couldn't see. My dad didn't know. The bloke in front of us didn't know. Like, no one around us knew what had happened. So you got that, like, kind of frustration of not scoring, but also, like, the question of what happened. And that just hasn't existed for 15 months, because you've been able to watch replay after replay after replay. You can go, if you missed it, you can go straight on Twitter and find out what's going on. Obviously, at Newcastle United, you don't get any signal anywhere near the ground, so you kind of do that while you're at the match, even when there's only 10,000 there, by the way, just to confirm, still doesn't work.
The confusion, though, right? That confusion's part of the enjoyment sometimes, because if you remember when we beat West Ham 3-0 under Rafa, and like, we were convinced that Mitt Richards scored. Like, we're celebrating that Mitt Rudd scored up in there. I think it was me, yeah. Ben Alex, I think you as well, Si.
Yeah.
Like, it's Mitt Rudd, everyone. It's Mitt Rudd. It's Kieran Clark, wasn't it?
Kieran Clark, yeah. It's a good day, that.
But it's those little things. You can't, you know, part of the enjoyment, right, of being at the match when it's live, right? You haven't got the, especially in Newcastle, you don't have like a big screen to see things played over and over again, right? You haven't even got that. So it's that kind of crack between you and your mates. It's the attitude towards a referee, right? You're questioning everything. There's doubts there, and it makes it part of the fun, right? Like, you know, you're not. I suppose on a certain level, it's almost like what VAR does now, right? You know, like VAR basically means that there isn't that kind of spontaneous reaction, that ongoing discussion that lingers between people, because it's just like, oh no, this is what happened, because we're going to replay it like 15 times. So yeah. That's another thing about being at the match that I miss, is the uncertainty. I do miss the uncertainty of certain things.
No, I totally agree. And my final thing that I'd really missed, that I'd sort of forgotten about, which we just did for the sake of it yesterday, was when someone comes to the corner from the other team to take a corner, calling them a dick and telling them they're shit. Like, I've really missed that. It's quite sad how much pleasure I got out of just griefing someone that I didn't even know his name, even when he came across. But yeah, it was just so brilliant to be back, and I feel quite lucky that I was one of the ones that got to go. Although we didn't manage to sell all the tickets, I don't think. Looking back at the performance, I thought it was more dismal than you, but it was certainly not a good performance. Do you think that performance against them was unexpected, considering how things have been over the past few weeks, or did you expect us to be terrible yesterday?
It's a good question, and you know my thoughts on the manager and what I generally expect from this team, which is just disappointment. But I think Bruce has made it clear, and he talks about it every week, to be fair, that when he's missing these good players, he doesn't know what to do. And I thought that team stank of just Wilson being missing. Like, that in itself showed, because Joe Linton was back in, and also Maximan doesn't really work as a second forward when he hasn't got someone as good as Wilson next to him. He still played very well, Maximan, but in a very, very individual capacity. He didn't really link up with other members of the team much, other than for the goal. It was more just him showboating the rest of the time. So, no, I wasn't surprised. I think there's an element also of the job is done, we're safe. And whilst we've all said on this podcast the last few weeks, it's very important that we still finish the season strongly because of how bad it's been. And it's important that we get to a respectable point total to take in the next season. Players probably don't see it that way. The likes of Shelby, the likes of Joe Linton, even the defenders are probably, Almiron are probably thinking, you know what, 2 games left. They might have started taking their feet off the gas, and that's the manager's job to sort out. You know, he's got to keep the players motivated, because unfortunately for him, he needs these results more than the players do. You know, the players have kind of done what they need to do in spite of the manager and kept us up. But the only players left on that side that seem to be trying are your Maximan, who I think is putting himself in the shop window. It's Willock, who's obviously just got the hunger to show everyone what he can do, but I thought pretty much everyone else looked like they might be just sort of letting their foot off the gas a bit, which is totally understandable from the players' perspective. They've been run ragged. There was injuries all over the place. And yeah, that falls on the manager and the coaching staff to say, well, look, lads, the job's not done yet. And to be fair, we've got the 3 points, so you could argue that didn't really matter. You're not going to... We needed it. We needed to win in an entertaining and positive way, but winning the match was the most important thing for Bruce, because results putting us into the magical 40s of points is probably all he cared about. But yeah, it's a funny one. I can't really say that it wasn't expected, and I can totally understand why we've had that game of football in a dead rubber against bottom of the league relegated team. Hard for the players to motivate themselves, never mind Steve Bruce to motivate them. So that, I'm not surprised with the way that kind of panned out.
I disagree a little bit. I thought the players should have and could easily have been more motivated than they were, because it was the first chance to play in front of the fans in such a long time. And I was surprised that it tailed off into the second half, because the atmosphere in the first half was save a couple of moments from the corner about Bruce reasonably early on, was really, really positive and really getting behind the team. And there was one song that lasted, like, I'm not even exaggerating, like 10 minutes at the end of the first half. And virtually the whole ground was joining in. Most people were just clapping along, like outside of the Gallagher in the corner. But like, it was loud and positive. And I was a bit shocked to see how much the performance tailed off. I know we've disagreed a little bit to the extent of that. Norman, what did you see in that performance yesterday that was different to the last couple of weeks? And why do you think it was the case?
I think you both made good points there. Mickey, you first, mate. I like the idea of the players being up for it because there's a crowd in there for the first time in a long time. But ultimately, I watched a few other games over the last couple of days, and Burnley have already survived, and they were absolutely atrocious against Liverpool. Fulham, Man United. Man United, they've got players who are, you know, stratospherically better than Moors, and they were poor against Fulham. They've got bigger fish to fry. Obviously, they've got the Europa League final coming up. But at the same time, it's not unique to Newcastle that the players were, shall we say, slightly unmotivated. And I think Si makes a good point. You know, subconsciously, regardless of how professional they might be, they would switch off. You know, they would switch off. It's like any job, I suppose. Ultimately, if you finish your tasks at work at like 4:15 and you're supposed to be working till 5, how much effort are you going to put in the last 45 minutes? It's, you know, you subconsciously do just switch off. And again, Bruce isn't necessarily a manager that players are going to break the next 4 when they don't need to, you know. But the performance itself, it wasn't a surprise, you know why? Because that level of mediocrity is what we are, right? So the surprise has been the performances of the last few weeks, right? The surprise was the Leicester performance. Yeah. That was a surprise. The surprise was the point. Well, the performance wasn't great, but we got a point. The surprise was the West Ham win. The surprise was the Burnley win. They're the surprises, mate. Like, the mediocrity is the default. So the minute that we start going on 22-game runs playing well, as opposed to winning twice in 22 games, that's when I'll turn and say, after a poor performance, well, that was a surprise. But right now, there's no surprise anybody else playing poorly, because ultimately, we've been poor for 2 seasons. So that's not me trying to be too negative. That's just a fact, right? How can you be surprised when Newcastle play poorly against Sheffield United, when ultimately we've played poorly against teams like them consistently for 2 years? There were, I thought, though, individual performances that were good, given the context of the game being utterly meaningless. Those players aren't going to be as motivated as Steve Bruce to get to 45 points and equal Rafa's magical total 2 years ago, which is the end game, obviously. But the performances, this is a TV view. I thought Almiron was really busy, which, you know, is pretty standard of Almiron, but I thought he was good. I thought Maximin was excellent in spells. Willock, again, it's interesting because having spoken to Alex's at the match, he said that Willock was alive when he came into their box, but for the rest of the game, he was like most other players. He wasn't necessarily at the races. To me and my brother were messaging each other during the match, and we're like, Willock is just phenomenal. He's just a phenomenal player. And again, your perception changes. But I also thought, you know, defensively, Freddy Fernandez was as solid and dependable as ever. I think Jacob Murphy was full of willing, but obviously his lack of quality, you know, that's obvious. He loses the ball a lot. And I thought Dubravka was solid. So individual performances, I thought, were all right. But ultimately, the overall performance, can't be surprised by that. We're poor, say. We've been poor for 2 years, and we're playing against Sheffield United at home when we've avoided relegation. Nothing surprising about yesterday.
Yeah, that's exactly it. What a 1-0 win over bottom of the league at home, who've already been relegated, is pretty much par for this Newcastle side, isn't it? So you're bang on about that, Norman. I think the only other thing I would comment is, that probably did impact how this game went, is didn't change the team. We've played at the weekend against, you know, the champions, and then we've got a midweek game. Why not rotate the squad a bit? Why not put some fresh legs out? He just picks the same 11 bar Joe Linton for Wilson. So what's he playing at? Just rotate it, put some fresh legs in. So those players are tired. A lot of them, like Shelvey, Almiron, have played pretty much every game since the gloves came off. And there was a bit of burnout in there, as well as why do they want to bust a gut to injure themselves for meaningless fixtures, you know, especially those who might think there's a transfer window coming up. So you're right, Norman, there's no way that the players' motivation could match the managers at this point, or the supporters, to be perfectly honest. You know, as far as they're concerned, they don't need to injure themselves to get a few extra points. That doesn't really mean much. So I absolutely understand why the players, again, weren't perhaps as at the races as we were kind of hoping for this first fixture in front of supporters.
Sorry for the background noise. My dog's just trying to get out the cat flap. It's too big. It's far too big. The performance, like the interesting thing is that you look at those performances yesterday by those individual players, and you think, well, like, there are bright spots, right? There have been bright spots for the last few weeks, and there were a couple of bright spots yesterday. And I don't want to be negative about it, because ultimately, as you both said, like, it's 3 points, right? And we're ending the season in a heck of a lot better shape. If you just purely look at the results and the goals scored and the performances, right, in general, we're ending the season in a lot better shape than we were a few months ago, right? So I'm trying to take the few positives from that I can. And yesterday, we played poorly, but we still won. All right, it was against Sheffield United. All right, they've got a minus 44 goal difference. But we played poorly yesterday and won. And that, for me, suggests possibly a little bit more of an overall confidence amongst the players themselves. I think it's important that we go to Fulham and maybe pick something up. I think losing to Fulham would probably have a little bit of it. It'll just kind of reignite that little bit of negativity, right? But in terms of what you're saying, Si, about him not changing the team, and I don't think he will on Sunday against Fulham as well, with Bruce, it's very much a case of if we play well and or if we win, I'm not going to change the team. If we lose and we get hammered, he'll maybe drop 4 or 5 players or bring in like a wild card like Matty Longstaff against Man U last season after we lost to Leicester 5-0. I think that's the logic. There's no looking at the opposition and going, right, what we need to do is I need to have this player in and this player in, and I need to play this way. It's literally, how do we play in the last match? All right, then we'll keep the same team. How do we play in the last match? Shocking. Watch that day. I'll bring in 3 different players or 4 different players. Yeah. That's the logic. So we played really well against Man City. We beat Leicester. Why change the team, ultimately? That'll be the logic, I reckon.
I mean, for balance, Sheffield United played the same 11 as well and just looked a bit more energetic and than we did. But they've got to kind of build a team. They're building a team for next season, whereas we're, as always, just kind of drifting into nowhere. So there's no obvious reason for us to kind of get our shit together, for want of a better phrase.
The lack of adaptability is a massive problem for Bruce. And Si, you've said there, Sheffield United played the same team, but Sheffield United every week play a team that's better than them. Like, that's what's different between them and us. Whereas we've gone from playing Man City, who granted had a couple of players missing, but are the champions of England and like brilliant. And we've played in exactly the same way with virtually the same 11 against the worst team in the league that are relegated with minus 44 goal difference. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I kind of really wrap my head around it.
They've also just thrown a 17-year-old academy kid up front for the last few games. So yeah, they haven't changed the team, but what they've done is they've kind of done what a lot of teams do at the end of the season when they've got now to play for the blood of a few youngsters. Right, that would be something I'd probably like to see at Newcastle, but unfortunately, we don't necessarily invest very much money in the academy, do we? And when we do, we get players like Matty Longstaff coming through and signing new contracts. We just didn't play them.
Yeah, the utterly backwards football club.
We decided to blood in 30-year-old Dwight Gale, give him a half for the first time in ages.
Yeah, who actually I thought individually was really quite poor yesterday. That was one I think a lot of you disagreed with us on that, but I didn't see any effort there from Gale. I was surprised to see that performance from him when he's just been given that new deal. I thought he would be playing to try and get a foothold back in the team again, and that's not what I saw from Dwight Gale yesterday. Overall, though, like, I think a pretty disappointing way to spend our only game at St James's Park in 15 months, and it'll be another few months before we get to go back, hopefully. Norman, you wanted to talk about something that the commentators have said, and I don't know what it is because I didn't watch it on the telly.
So we're winning 1-0. We're in the last minute, maybe it's even injury time. I think Sheffield United had a free kick. It read it to death, didn't they? And the commentator The co-commentator was Don Goodman. I've got no idea who the main commentator was. They all sound the same, didn't they? Apart from Martin Tyler, who sounds like you would, if he was an ice cream, he'd lick himself. But the commentator said, what was it? You see, something along the lines of, it would be typical Newcastle, or it wouldn't be Newcastle if there wasn't the drama at the end. And I just thought, hold on a second. So it's the extension and the reinforcement of this narrative that's been constructed by nobody who supports Newcastle United, right? This is a figment of the media and people within the media. Are Newcastle United renowned? Are we renowned as a club historically for conceding last-minute goals and for, you know, dropping glorious positions right at the death? Or do we do that more than anyone else? And it just made me think this whole season, because I haven't been able to get the matches in person, so maybe a lot of it's, I'm not aware of a lot of it. Not all matches are televised for a start when you go there in person. That was never the case, right? It was like five or six matches a weekend. But we've had this opportunity where we haven't been able to get the match. We've had to watch every single game. Because we can't meet up with our mates, we're probably consuming more media because we want to get that fix, right? We want to have that crack on. So this season, what I've heard a lot of, and we've mentioned it loads, is the narrative around Newcastle. We're the club who, there's always drama. The manager comes out and says there's always drama. It wouldn't be Newcastle if it wasn't drama. And it's like, well, where's it coming from? Well, what is it about Newcastle United that makes a commentator say it would be typical Newcastle if they conceded in the last minute? Like, what is the kind of rationale that opinion's based on? And it was just another thought at the time was, I just kind of weird to get back the matches, or when we're in a situation where if I kind of get in the match, Newcastle United versus Sheffield United is not going to be on TV and I don't have to listen to that absolute garbage that's being spouted. So I just wanted to vent that and, I feel better for it. Thanks, lad.
Well, I'm glad you feel better. You're right. That whole thing's made up. Like, I've never been able to understand this. The healthiest way to go about it, though, Norman, is just don't listen to them. Turn them down. Like you would do with if Michael Owen was one of the commentators on BT Sport, turn it off. Listen to it on silent. I don't know whether they might have the option now of just having the stadium noise, because that would have been class yesterday, because the fans were quite loud. And obviously that wouldn't be an option when...
But what would I talk about on podcast, Mickey, if I didn't have this to talk about? You know what I mean? I've got to have something. I've got to have some. Give me something. You know what I mean? I need it. I hate it, but I need it at the same time.
the post-match was a bit, I'm going to say, strange. The club announced that the players were going to do a lap of honour, which I thought was unexpected considering we've only been there once a season and we've been absolutely dismal for most of it. But they announced it, so the vast, vast majority of the crowd stayed, as you would expect considering we haven't been able to go for ages. It happened quite quickly. So the game finished, the kind of all of the players sort of edged towards the tunnel and then pretty quickly headed off around the pitch, followed by like a contingent of the lads that hadn't been involved in their own clothes. And then like a good, I don't know, like 10 meters or so behind them. So a long way behind the players that had actually played, Bruce came around on his own and was met by a real hearty chorus of boos pretty much all the way around the stadium, or at least until I left, because they came to our corner sort of first. What goes through his head to think that was a good idea?
I genuinely don't know. It's a really, really hard question to answer, because I think you're right. I think you could have just sort of stood at the halfway line, done a bit of this and avoided any trouble. For those listening, I've just done a little clap, you know. He didn't have to do a lap of honour, certainly not by himself. The only thing I can think is that in his head, he legitimately thinks that he's done a good job and that most people agree with him. Because that's what he seems to think all along, that it's just a noisy minority of keyboard warriors. So I think in his head, he probably thought, I might get away with this. I might just get a few claps and then I can kind of just give myself a pat on the back and hope it's done. I also think he's just switched off to it, because his comments after the lap of honour seem to suggest he thought it was just a few people and that he's not everyone's cup of tea, as if it's just a small minority of people who had a beef with him and that everyone else was dead buzzing. That's not, I mean, by all accounts, that's not how it was. I was tucking into my curry by this stage. I didn't stick around to see what happened. But I don't know. I think he's that deluded about the fact that his smugness post-match last week and the way he's done his little interview with TalkSport since we won a game, suggests that in his head he thinks he's absolutely proved everyone wrong by this small run of decent form he's had in the last month. I think in his head he reckons he shut everyone up, and I think that's why he did it. I think he genuinely thought, I'm out the woods here and everyone's going to appreciate me finally. And he's wrong, obviously, but at the same time, I think his ears basically switch off when he boos. So in his head, he was going around just for the sake of the number of people who probably were just clapping because they were just happy to be at the match and see we win. So yeah, I don't know. I can't get into the bloke's head anymore. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, there was quite a, like, the overwhelming atmosphere was really positive. Like I've said, there was, you know, the Bruce chance in the first half were minor. It wasn't that many people, but because there was like way less people in the ground, they came across quite loud, and I know you will have heard them. And that started after about 10 minutes. It was like a chorus of all of the usual class songs, and then that. So like I know you will have heard it. So he must have been aware that those same people were going to be in the ground when he went round at the end. All he's had to do was just go amongst the players, because it was a minority. It was definitely a minority of people that were booing him. There wasn't many people actively clapping him, obviously, but it was definitely a minority booing him. If he just stayed amongst the players, like it wouldn't have even happened, because everyone wanted to applaud Willock and Wilson, and you know the players that have turned the season around a bit. Maximan, all of those lads were there, and they were lapping up the applause. If Bruce had just snuck around with them, none of this would have happened. And I just sort of think like he just brings it on himself. It's like self harm. I genuinely can't understand what his mindset was. I'm curious about what you two lads think about people booing him, because I actually felt, I don't want to say sorry for him, but just a bit disappointed, and not in the fans, but that's what it's come to, that we've got this one chance to go to the game, 10,000 of us, once in 15 months, and some of us boo the manager as he walks on the pitch. It made me really sad about the state of Newcastle United. Would you two have booed him?
That wording you've just used there is the right way to word it. Make you sad about the state of things, sad about the fact that people are so unhappy that even back in the stadium after over a year and winning, people are still annoyed at how the fact that we're having to enjoy a 1-0 win at home to Sheffield United is one of the few good moments we've had this season. I think it's absolutely justified. I think he's got off lightly because he's just scraped out the last few results. But it's been shocking for the vast majority of 2 years now, and for over a year of that, people haven't been able to vent that frustration anywhere other than on the internet. So I think people are entitled to kind of let them know that actually what has happened over the course of the season and during the accumulation of points that has taken place over the last 10 months isn't okay, and not everyone's happy with just pulling it off at the last minute to scrape safe of relegation again. I think I'm a little bit surprised there wasn't more of it, but I totally understand that the vast majority of people who went to the game just want to enjoy being at the game again, and I would have done the same, to be perfectly honest. But people are frustrated. People are frustrated that Newcastle have moved nowhere but in the wrong direction for 2 years, and nothing's changed just because we've had a few results to get out of the woods in the last few weeks. So to some people, it's not enough, and rightly so.
Norman?
I wouldn't have booed him, but I didn't even recall a time that I have booed anyone, even if I've disliked them. But at the same time, do I think that people deem it were shouldn't have done it? Not the slightest. I'll tell you why. Because what people have had, people who love that football club, who've gone to matches all their lives, have had Steve Bruce since he arrived at Newcastle, like undermining them with the way that he talks to people like TalkSport. And comes across in interviews, like undermining, like Newcastle United fans. Carlin were histrionic. Carlin were delusional. Saying we shouldn't have these expectations. And on the same day, or maybe what was the day earlier, so within 24 hours of the game, he'd been making jokes about Newcastle never being able to sign someone like Harry Kane. Sarcastic jokes. Like, undermining any fans' ambition. You know, this is a club that did break the world record to sign the best number 9 in the world at the time. I mean, you could argue original Ronaldo was pretty good himself at the same time. But, you know, Shearer was one of the greatest players. The moment we signed him, and I'm not saying that people expect us to get out and spend 200 million on Harry Kane, but what I'm saying is to absolutely dismiss it out of hand. But not even that, to also, by saying it, suggest that the number 9 you've currently got isn't as good, and therefore undermine him, is enough reason to get people's backs up. So anyone who booed him, like, fair, you know, like completely fair. And I didn't feel sorry for him. The bloke took on the responsibility, took on the massive pay check that came his way, thinks he can do the job, thinks he's done a good job. Nah, there's no, I don't feel sorry for him. If if it gets personal, if people start criticizing him like for how he appears, or they just start seeing horrible things, fair enough. But like, you know, booing a manager who hasn't done a particularly good job after he spent 12 months coming up with outrageous comments that have undermined you as a fan, fair?
I think that's exactly it, Norman. If he had just been rubbish at the job, but seemed like he was trying, he's just not good enough, I would feel sorry for him, because, you know, he must be, what, 60? He's an old bloke. But because of his behaviour and the way he basically puts fire on adds to the flames of how the world perceives Newcastle fans, instead of defending us, the club he bloody manages, instead of defending the supporters and being on side with us, he's joined that other side of just disparaging we're, and like you say, Norm, he's scoffed at we're, he's laughed at we're, he's called we're hysterical, and he's just continued that ridiculous expectations line that's been bandied around by people who don't watch Newcastle. He deserves more criticism than he gets. And you're right, Norman, it doesn't need to be personal. It can just be about that and about what he's not achieved this season. It doesn't have to be about, you know, Steve Bruce the man. It's literally just his performance in the job he claims to want to try his best at. And yeah, I think he's not everyone's cup of tea. Doesn't quite illustrate the situation properly. And either he doesn't really believe that, and that's just how he's kind of put it to the interviewer when he was asked about it, or he's that deluded that he does think that it's just a couple of people, just you can't please everybody kind of thing. And that's rubbish. Like, he should be saying, look, I totally understand these people, I totally understand that this season on the whole hasn't really been good enough, and that we should be aspiring to be better. There's ways he could answer these questions that would make people at least respect him, and he never does. He just goes down the same old lazy route of, yeah, those people don't know what they're talking about, those people just have unrealistic expectations. And it's unforgivable the way he does that.
Instead of saying, I'm doing the best I can, I'm doing a good job, like, just say, you know what, I could have done better. Mm-hmm. I could have done better. And I think that would have got rid of like a lot of ill feeling in one fell swoop, right? But that's not the case. And unfortunately, I didn't want to harp on it, but because I know we've got more to talk about. But it is, you look at his managerial career, you look at how he interacted with Villa fans, you look at how he interacted with Sunderland fans. Who would have ever thought that you'd be sitting here as a Newcastle fan thinking, I understand how Villa fans and Sunderland fans felt. Two clubs that we probably cannot stand more than any others, and yet at the same time, we've got so much in common.
Yeah, it brings me a great deal of pain, that, actually, to think that I identify with an Aston Villa fan. Think about the managers that Newcastle have had over the last 10 or 12 years, and who do we hate? And it's not the bad managers that Newcastle United fans hate. Like, nobody really hates Alan Pardew. Nobody hates Joe Kinnear. Like, we hate John Carver because he griefed the fans a lot. He started on two of them at Hull away. We now hate Steve Bruce because of the way he talks about us in the press. Everybody hates Graeme Souness because he's a horrible prick and they're constantly belittling the club. Those are the people that we hate. That's where the disdain and the dislike comes from. It's not from being a bad manager. It's not even from being a bad manager and not knowing you're a bad manager. It's from being a bad manager, but bad mouthing the fan base that pays your wages and that supports the team. And it's the reason that it's worse for Bruce, obviously, is because he claims he's a Newcastle fan, which is just definitely not the case from the way it goes on. Anyway, we should move on because we could talk about Bruce all night in the negative. Norman, you wanted to talk about Joe Willock, who had a good game. He was clearly very tired, and I thought he was very tired against Man City as well. I thought that was quite apparent in the last 20 minutes against them, so probably shouldn't have played 90 minutes. He was always going to get most of the game because it was his only chance to play in front of the home fans. He did an interview in front of the crowd, which I thought was class because you can hear people singing in the background asking him to stay. And Luke Edwards has reported today, I think it was Luke, it was definitely from, was it the Telegraph? I could be completely wrong. Somebody has reported today that Newcastle United are going to send in a bid to turn his loan deal into a permanent deal and are confident he wants to come. I'm not sure you agree that that's the case, Norman.
Look, he might have been keeping his call. I wasn't actually necessarily wanting to target Willock in the context of his performance yesterday, but what I will say is the headers that he scored for so far. I sent a message to a pal of mine. I said, he's like got I've said he's like Dyer and Bellamy combined, but no, I'm actually going to throw Les Ferdinand in there because when he leaps in that box, man, honestly, wow. Like, he had a quiet game yesterday, right? But the reality is he got the winning goal. And imagine, like, as a centre forward, like, imagine if Les Ferdinand had, like, 90 minutes where he didn't deem much, but he got the winning goal with a header, he'd be like, had a good game. Wilt was like that yesterday. But his patter at the end of the match yesterday was very diplomatic, right? That's a crack. He's not going to come out and say, oh, you know what? It's great being in front of 10,000 fans in a team that's fourth, fifth, bottom. I cannot wait to stay. Like, he's a 20-year-old kid with bags of talent who's done nothing other than enhance his reputation since he got here, right? And he's clearly, when he talks, you can see this is a kid who's come through the Arsenal Academy, right? One of those academies where the kids, where the education of the player is valued as much as the playing ability. Like, he's just intelligent, right? It's as simple as that. And I thought his answer was incredibly diplomatic. He didn't close any doors. He didn't leave any, like, too wide open. You know, he just said, I've got to have a conversation. Fair enough. I didn't pick up on him saying that he definitely wants to stay. So great. If he's made those noises behind closed doors, fantastic. But ultimately, the way I would look at it is I'd be thinking, Ari, he has a kid who's probably added 10 million onto his transfer fee already by the fact, and the mere fact he's got 7 goals in 12 games, which any centre forward you sign on deadline day to keep you at the relegation zone is considered a success. If Newcastle were like second bottom in January and we spent 30 million on a forward who got 7 goals in 12 games and kept up, it would be like a miracle signing. Willock has had that impact. He has lifted us. Maximan, we know how much of an impact he's had. Wilson, we know how good he is. But Willock has been the key to this run, right? He's been absolutely key. His goals alone tell you that. Given his level of intelligence, given his ability, given the Premier League is cutthroat and brutal, I just think that somebody like Moyes, somebody like Rodgers, someone like possibly Graham Potter at Brighton, although financially I don't know, will be taking a look at that and going, you know what? I want to get that kid here this season. And if Willock has the chance to go and play for, I'm not saying Moyes is a manager necessarily, but West Ham is a club with more ambition than us. Potter is a manager at Brighton. Rodgers is a manager at Leicester. Clubs that we should be competing with, by the way. Ancelotti is a manager at Everton, or just Everton in general, who at least as bad as have been, have ambition. These offers are probably going to come in for the kid, right? So regardless of how many games he's played at Newcastle, as a 21-year-old kid with that much ability, if these kind of offers come in, would I blame him for taking one of them? Comparing it to Newcastle under Steve Bruce, where he'll get a lot of game time, he'll improve naturally because he's young, so he's going to improve just by the mere fact he's playing, but he's going to hit a wall. When he needs that input from a really good coach and staff and a quality manager, he'll hit a wall. So for me, I'd be surprised to see him sign. But if he does, brilliant.
Yeah, I have to say I agree. I can't see him staying at Newcastle beyond the end of the season, which is really sad. If the club had anything else about them, they would be trying now to possibly extend the loan deal for another year and do it right now, and then say with a view to buy it for 40 million quid or something, which obviously we know we're never going to pay. But try and convince Arsenal that maybe you will to try and get that deal done and keep for another year. He'll be playing for a better team than Newcastle United next year for sure. He's too good. He's too good to come here. And a small part of me doesn't want him to come because I think he's an excellent footballer and I think he could be a real good player for England and a real good Premier League footballer. But he probably, like you say, Norman, will stunt his own growth by coming to Newcastle.
I said this a couple of weeks ago, Mickey. I said, you just need to have a look around at the other young players at Newcastle at the minute. And is anyone flourishing? The longer they've spent with Bruce, the worse their career has got. And yes, Willock has obviously come in on loan and been a revelation. Like many before him, you could argue that Rondon's loan was absolutely class for the journey. The first time we got Kennedy, he turned the season round. Luke Remy a few years ago, same thing. Like basically,
Islam Slimani.
That heater against Arsenal.
The one header, that header.
That neck.
But it's often not the case that carries on into a second season. Obviously, we never found out with any of those players I've just mentioned, but except for Kennedy, who was atrocious the following year. The only thing I would say, Norman, is you're right. All of those players all of those clubs you've just mentioned are far more proactive than we are when it comes to stuff like this. But finances across the Premier League, it's just going to be so interesting to see if anyone really will shell out what might be 30 to 40 million if you want to sign Willock permanently based on the last 6 weeks alone. So it might be that no one can afford him at the minute on his current market value. And it might also be that Arsenal, they need the cash as well if they want to sort their defence out potentially or or even just to keep their front three at the club might involve them needing to recoup some transfer fees. So they might be keen to sell, but whether anyone can meet that asking price could lead us down that route, Mickey, of well, he might consider a loan, but even then, is Newcastle the... It's not the only option he's going to have, and is it the option he would choose, given that the likes of both Longstaff's, Jamal Lewis, none of these players are really flourishing at Newcastle as prospects that they are. So I think that's why, Norman, you're right, you get that diplomatic, he says all the right things, he knows what to say to the interviewer when asked, but absolutely will take time to think about what's best for himself, speak to his agents, probably speak to his family, probably speak to coaches at Arsenal about what they think. And I can't see many people saying aye to spend another year at Newcastle, because what's in it for him other than the fact that he's basically the best player in the team right now, and it's that's a good thing to be the important best player at a club, but it can't last forever.
The thing, the only counterpoint to that, Si, is the Arsenal staff did get their heads together in January and decide that they were happy for him to come to Newcastle, and that was in the immediate aftermath of our season just imploding with the Brentford loss and the dismal run of performances over December, which started the brutal run that we've had under Bruce. So if they thought that we were an all right bet then, you never know, they might think we're an all right bet now. But who knows?
They needed to get bodies out because they brought in Ødegaard, right? So there's that. But I think it'd be interesting. I think Alex was saying before, he did a podcast with Ars Blog, like a massive Arsenal fanzine and podcast, and a few Arsenal fans' opinions of Willock is that he's not necessarily good enough defensively, and also the fans want to see them buy players as opposed to bringing through the brilliant academy players that they have. And I think obviously Arteta letting him gone suggests that maybe he doesn't rate him as much. We've seen him brilliant. We've seen him do brilliantly well. But obviously, some managers just didn't fancy certain players, right? So we'll see. I think Arsenal are definitely willing to sell. And you're right. The loan deal, if we pay his full wages for the entire season, maybe, and pay a loan fee. But they're so desperate for money right now. I think if somebody comes in with even 20, 25 million, they'll probably consider it. Whether or not we'll spend that money, I don't know. I can imagine Leicester City, even though clubs are skinned, coming in and saying 25 million for Willock. Aye, we'll take a chance.
You have to hope that for once, Ashley's frugality with the club's money might pay dividends just this once, and we might be in a position that we can spend a little bit where other clubs probably can't, but I'm not massively confident. Norm, the way you've described the Arsenal fans' view of players there is just the total opposite of what everything should be about in football. Like, can you imagine thinking you'd rather sign a load of players than have a bunch of players that have come through your academy that understand the club playing well for you? It's just mental. That's wrong and hanging. I'm so glad we don't think like that.
Anyway, well, my dream is to have a team of 11 academy players who are doing brilliantly well. Like literally spending a lot of money on an academy, and 20 years later having a crop of youngsters coming through that does fantastically well. I honestly didn't think there can't be anything better than football than being able to, I guess, identify on a level with the players that are in front of you on the pitch, right? Developing those players, it's a really, really lovely thought, and one that's probably a bit fantastical given how capitalist the game is now at the top level.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Si.
No, it's just the point on Mike Ashley. I was just going to say, I think he will be very, very conscious of... He probably thought the only reason we signed Joe Linton for 40 million because he thought there'd be the potential to just spin that round in a Richarlison type way and just make a tidy profit very quickly. He'll now be, people will probably say the same thing about Willock. You pay anything for him now and he's only going to get better, so you'll increase in value. But he might be thinking, well, that's not necessarily the case. He told us that about Joe Linton, and he's worth a fraction of what we've paid. So I think there's another reason there why Ashley would not sanction a high spend at this point in time. So that makes me less encouraged that this could happen.
I know what you're saying, but I think it's very different to compare Joe Linton, who came in having played up front in Germany, to Joe Willock, who's a young English central midfielder that has proven it in the Premier League.
To normal people, yes, but to Mike Ashley, it doesn't make a difference. It's the same thing to him. It's buying a football player for a risky asking price.
Fair point. Yeah, I accept that. We're 48 minutes into the preview review, and we haven't previewed the game at all at the weekend, so we better move on to Fulham. We play Fulham on... Is it on Saturday or Sunday? I don't know.
Sunday. Always Sunday, last game of the season.
So Sunday, of course it is, yeah. Sunday afternoon, in what can only be described, Si, as a dead rubber. Are you remotely excited about this game?
Excited, no. I'm ready for the season to end. It's been a long, painful watch, and I'm ready for a summer because I didn't really get one last year. So it feels like we're not really at a break from football, and because every match has been on telly, you just don't have any weekends where you're not kind of orientated on the match. So I'm looking forward to having me weekends back just for a bit of a breather. And like you say, hopefully we'll be back at the match and going to games again and not having to watch everyone on telly and listening to commentators and all the stuff I've talked about already. So no, I'm not excited. It's the second of three dead rubbers, really, because the Man City game was a dead rubber. Third, sorry. I don't know what there is to get out of it. Like we said a few weeks ago, the only thing we should be looking to do is get the best performance out of the team we can so that we can start next season positively if we finish this one strongly. And to be fair, we've won another game, and if we win this one, you can't really argue against we've finished the season in some good form. Doesn't really matter how we play, the results show that we've got better. And if we win another game without Wilson, it's another positive. Albeit with question marks over Willock and Maximan and potentially others. Is Almiron going to stay for another year under Bruce, who earlier in the year he seemed to basically fall out of favour with both ways? I think that Fulham need this more than we do. They need to get themselves ready for another season in the Championship, and we'll probably be trying, especially given the fact that I think they've only got, like, their form's fallen off a cliff. I think they've only got like 2 points out of the last 9 or 10 games. Like, the supposed resurgence of Fulham just never really materialised, which has let us off, but also we probably killed their morale by getting the results that made it now and impossible for them to catch us a few weeks back. So if you're Scott Parker, you want to finish on a high, and it just gives you that extra bounce going into the Championship, whereas if you finish getting hammered, it could well be that, you know, we're it affects them going into next season. I mean, they came back up this year, but certainly we sent them down with a bang with Benitez's last game, so it'd be nice to do the same. But I suspect that we'll get a similar performance from our players. Like, job's done, what's that to play for? There's a lot of uncertainty going into the summer in terms of players, manager, takeover again. But then equally, that can also mean that you get a bit of a free roll of a game, a free hit. And that is what happened last time we played Fulham away at the end of the season. It was just all the pressure was off everybody, and we got a really enjoyable game of football that showed from the players that they were just enjoying basically a friendly kick around on a Sunday afternoon. So that could happen. If it's like that, I'll enjoy it. But I'm apprehensive because we didn't play well last night. And I think Bruce thinks the job's done and that we'll just set up in the same way against the Fulham team who've had their confidence completely taken away. Instead of, he could easily set us up in a way, just, you know, let's just go for this. Let's try and score some goals. But he won't. He won't do that. So, nah, not excited.
Norman, I said at the start of the show that that yesterday was one of the great days. So maybe slightly tongue-in-cheek, although I did have a great time. Fulham away 2 years ago was one of the great days. Four goals away from home. Rafa was still the manager. Rondon scored in front of the away end. Loads of the old songs. People with their tops off. Dead hot. Full of pints in South London. Things are very different now. But I just wanted you quickly to think back and tell the listeners about how mint a day that was. And then have a look at Fulham and think about, you know, whether or not they've deserved to go down this season compared to us, and are they a better football side than us that have just been more unlucky than Steve Bruce's incredibly lucky Newcastle United side, or do you think the table shows the true picture of the quality of the clubs?
So first of all, on the match 2 years ago, absolutely spectacular weekend. It couldn't have gone any better, other than the fact that my dad got so bladdered on the Saturday that I couldn't get a hold of him when he went back to his hotel, and for about 5 hours I thought he died. So that was a bit rough. Turns out he was alright. Like, his phone had broken, and he got bladdered and went back to his hotel, and there wasn't answering his phone in the room. Apart from that moment, the whole weekend was spectacular. Yeah, the weather was incredible. The performance was amazing. And I love Fulham away. I've been quite a few times, and I love it because, having lived in London for a long time, going into West London, like especially to Fulham and Putney, it feels like you feel like you're a bit of an invader because it's dead posh. You know, like, I've lived in Lewisham, Tottenham, and Walthamstow and they gander Putney, it feels like, oh yeah, you know the perception that people have of London when they've never been there, they think, oh, it's full of posh people. So it's like that is the represent, that is the stereotype, is Putney and London, Fulham. So it feels nice going in there. You feel like you shouldn't be there. You can just be loud and obnoxious, and you're more loud and more obnoxious just because you feel that's what you should be like. So I agree, great days. But no, Fulham deserves to get relegated, because look at the points difference, mate. You can't make an argument for them being a better footballing side than we're, and being unlucky and us being luckier when the points difference that's great. If it was 3 or 4 points, maybe you could have an argument. You could say either probably do play a slightly better football. They still struggle to score goals. They've done alright defensively. Parker is probably someone who's going to have a long career in management. Whether or not he'd be dead successful depends what your barometer is for judging success, Reid. But now that they haven't, they had a lovely spell. They were really, really close. We were 3 points behind, but we were playing terribly. They were getting a bit better, but it went wrong for them. And I think they missed an opportunity in the January transfer window. He brought in Josh Madger, who did all right for a couple of games. We brought in Joe Willock, and the difference between those two players has been huge. If he brought in somebody who had the impact of Willock, maybe the points gap wouldn't be so big, but he didn't, and they deserve to get relegated, mate. They haven't even made 30 points. It's an atrocious showing. Regardless of what we've been like, they've been overall a lot worse.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's it. You know, we've stayed up this season by virtue of there being three really, really bad sides. And, you know, Sam Allardyce has resigned, or he's resigned pending the last game, like the honourless prick that he is. Fulham are going down terrible. And yesterday we beat a Sheffield United side only just, and they could have scored in the first couple of minutes. I forgot to mention that early on. They should have scored as well, where just missed the outside of the post. Beat them once, lost against them once, but they've gone down as one of the worst teams in Premier League history. We're incredibly lucky the way this year has gone. And Bruce is incredibly lucky for the way this year has gone for so many reasons. And he probably is, well, almost certainly is going to be the manager next season. I think that about wraps it up, lads. I'll get your predictions for the final time this season. It's a bit of a tradition that you predict Newcastle are going to win, whether you think it or not. But this time I want you to be honest. What do you think the score is going to be? Norman?
2-1 Newcastle.
Get in. Si?
I can see another 1-0 win for Newcastle, which actually, mathematically, we could go as high as 12th, which is mad. 12th with 45 points. Bruce can shut wall up with that.
Go fund me a statue for him.
I know. Because, yeah, Wolves have got Man U, so they've got a 3-goal head start on us. But if they lose 2-0, we win by one. That's enough, isn't it? And then, yeah, Palace have got Liverpool, I think, and Southampton. Got another hard game, so we're good. All of them could lose and we could win, and then I wouldn't know what to do myself. Like, if we finish 12th after the season we've had and all the grief we've given Bruce, I mean, it could happen, and then I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll quit.
A true faith might have to fold, considering how bad we've been about Bruce. The national press would be just horrific. Like, we'd have to just put a wall around Newcastle and block out any incoming internet signals and just like live in our own little bubble for a few years to let them calm down. Anyway, thanks everyone.
We'll have to deny the existence of Luke Edwards. Just deny he exists.
Yeah. It's the only way. It's the only way through it. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been the first and last preview review in a two-game week. The final post-match podcast will be out this weekend. I'm not sure when it's been recorded yet, but it'll be with you probably Monday night, I would think. We'll have the usual end of season stuff coming for you soon. We'll have an end of season review. I know Mike and Norman are doing, I think you're doing a Prem Patter review for patrons. Is that correct?
We'll be doing a Prem Patter review for patrons, but we'll also throughout the summer be doing some different podcasts, shall we say, that probably involve, you know, various facial hairs of certain players and the usual stuff where we can go a bit surreal. So there'll be plenty of that.
And Charlotte will have her live show. I think, no, it's not on because I said that it was on last time, but it isn't on this week because the Supporters Trust are hosting live events as part of the pledge scheme. So that, listen to that. That's got Alan Shearer as a special guest amongst others. So tune into that on Friday night at 7:00. Thanks everyone for listening. Cheers.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.